Dr. Explorer, I'm Charles Wolforth. Diabetes used to be the kind of diagnosis that was assumed to put a stop to athletic careers, but that is not necessarily so. On today's show, we'll be meeting some amazing athletes who excel despite diabetes. And we'll talk about dealing with this diagnosis if you have kids, or if you're an everyday athlete who just wants to keep fit. It's an interesting challenge dealing with your blood chemistry while you work out, and I think all our listeners will find the discussion fascinating. We'll also give information about how you can support people with diabetes and finding a cure. The Tour de Cure is coming up this weekend on the 12th. And as always, we're going to be talking to some folks who do amazing things outdoors, which is sort of one of the really fun things about our show. And just to start off with, I have two guests. Jody Barton is in the studio with me right now. Jody is an elite athlete who is... did a lot of outdoor stuff. She was on the U.S. women's skeleton team, trained at Lake Placid, and competed internationally, and then had a diagnosis of type 1 diabetes when she was 32 years old after she'd come to Alaska. Thanks for being here, Jody.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And on the phone from Pittsburgh, Will Cross is with us. And Will is a adventurer and climber. He's climbed the seven highest peaks on the seven continents, has been... to the North and South Pole, Greenland, Patagonia, just everywhere you can think of. And he's actually works with diabetes and is himself has type 1 diabetes and does research on the whole thing. Thanks for being with us, Will.
Oh, it's great to be here, Charles. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. So, Jody, you were, athletics was a really important part of your life, and you're, 32, mature person, and then suddenly you get this diagnosis. And what did you think when you got that news? That must have been horrifying.
Yeah, it was. I wasn't sure, and I didn't have an understanding of what was going on with my body. I had no family history of diabetes, either type 1 or type 2. It was about 7 years ago when I was 32. My diagnosis was in July, so I had been out on multiple backpacking trips already up here outside of Anchorage, and I was training for my second year doing the Lost Lake Trail Run down in Seward.
Oh, yeah, which is like 14, 15 miles.
14, 15 miles. And I remember I was in the hospital, and the doctor came in and said, "You have diabetes," and I just looked at them, and I was really confused about what that meant. And one of the physicians that was working with me, I kind of said, "I got to go. I've got, a date to go on a run and a swim this afternoon." And he just looks at me and he says, "You're not going to be able to do that anymore. Your life is different now."
Wow.
So that him telling me that is the one thing that stands out in my mind as the biggest impact of saying your life is going to change. You're no longer going to be able to do those outdoor activities that you enjoyed to do.
Well, let's talk about why that would be the case. It's your body is not processing sugar the way it did before. And how does that affect, what does it mean? Let's give a little bit of a primer on what it
right,
means.
Right, sure. So when your body's not processing sugar, you have dangers of a really high blood sugar or a really low blood sugar when you're not managing your diabetes and on top of it 100%. But I've found through continued exercise and nutrition and kind of experimenting and keeping a log of how much of what I eat and how that impacts when I exercise and what time of day, it doesn't limit me in doing anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you've had to learn along the way?
Yeah, I've had many coaches that have helped me. So I was able to do that Lost Lake run. I got out of the hospital, and
wow.
Friends of mine that I had been training with had done some research, and they were convinced we could beat the disease at that time, not really getting grasp of
not
difference between type 1
it.
And type 2. But they got me right out the next day, and we started on a short one-mile run, got halfway through, checked my blood sugar, was able to get home, had a snack. We kind of built up from there, and over the next month, I did get back up to being able to go do the 15-mile trail run, and we had a little system where my blood sugar kit was in my Camelback, and we would slow down just a bit but not totally stop because we were trying to beat our time still from the previous year. And my friend would get out my blood sugar kit, and we would, she'd hold it, I'd prick my finger, we'd hand it back and forth, then test my blood sugar while we were running. So
wow.
I did that a couple of times during the run, and then we ended up beating our time by maybe 10 minutes.
Cool.
So yeah,
cool.
It was fun.
So what were the symptoms, or what brought you to the hospital in the first place?
It all seemed to come on really fast. Like I said, I was doing fine. We were running. a lot. I had gone on a backpacking trip that weekend and experienced exhaustion like I had never felt before. Just really tired and lethargic and wanting to sit down and take my pack off all the time. Extremely thirsty. So yeah, they brought me to the hospital and that was it. My vision had started to go a little bit blurry.
Wow.
But I was in pretty severe. I remember my blood sugar was near 800 by the time I was in the emergency department.
So what does that number mean?
A typical number after a person eats, you might be like 100 to 150. You want to stay in that range for your blood sugar. Huh. And yeah, I was at 800, so I was on the very high end of it. But other than being tired and a little bit of blurred vision and thirsty, I felt actually fine. I didn't feel sick.
So type 1, type 2. Type 1 is what you're born with, or is it? Type 2 is something that you get. I mean, is that the simple way of saying it?
Both of them that you can get. I mean, I was 32 and I have
right.
type 1.
But I mean, it was, okay.
So it's...
What is the difference?
Type 1 is your body is no longer producing insulin.
Okay.
And type 2, your body either underproduces or overproduces.
Oh, okay. Oh, good definition. So Will, tell me about your story with this disease. How does it fit in with your sort of kind of amazing adventuring? When did you find out that you had it?
So I was 9, very similar to Jody, in fact. This was 1976. The doctor said I would not be able to do really hard exercise anymore. And I think, like most athletes, even as a 9-year-old, I just was determined not to hear the answer, you cannot do this. And that was sort of the spirit that I took to the poles and to climb the 7 summits, because, you know, it's very challenging physically and mentally, and of course insulin and glucose, that's sort of the engine of your body. And yes, I wanted to do the expeditions, but I also wanted to demonstrate to myself and to others that the diabetes is very challenging, but it doesn't have to stop you from chasing after what's important to you.
Yeah, and you've carried that message to a lot of other forums. You've sort of made that part of your life, is to spread that word to people.
I have. You know, I've been fortunate. I've worked with the ADA for many years. That Tour to Cure is a fantastic sort of get out the vote demonstration of diabetes. And been up in Alaska, of course, to climb Denali, and a beautiful big place. I'd love to get up there again. But yeah, I mean, diabetes, you live with it. There's no cure. And I think that's important to mention. But you live with it. You don't survive it, as it were. I mean, you get on with your life and you do the best you can. And I think Jody's demonstrated that it's possible.
Uh-huh, yeah. So you have taken it sort of to the extreme. I mean, you've been on these extraordinary expeditions, which are pretty hazardous, you know, regardless of whether you have any kind of disease, right, where you're in extreme conditions and irregular meals and extreme temperatures, and you may not be getting the right amount of sleep, and you might be pushing your body to the extremes. Do you have to like be doing math
Certainly.
To figure out like what you're, you know, how you're going to manage your blood chemistry for all those different variables?
Yes, there's a lot of management and a lot of preparation, but that's true for any patient with diabetes. On my climb specifically, I sort of live with the fact that there have been some significant developments in the last, let's say, 20 years in terms of the accuracy and the speed and the comfort of blood testing, the predictability, the ease of delivery for insulin, the accuracy and ease of use of insulin pumps, and now the combination of all that using continuous glucose monitoring, which is sort of a little sensor that you stick on the side of maybe your stomach or the side of your arm, and it gives a 24/7 reading of what your blood glucose is, and you can coordinate that with your with my insulin pump. You know, the two sort of talk to each other, but they they allow me to make decisions, but they also allow me to anticipate whether I might need more insulin or less, depending on the usual variables, which is food and exercise.
Yeah, and I use the same system for what I do, even just getting out, going on a hike, going backcountry skiing, you know, daily exercise and food intake. It's great to have a pump and a CGM, and it just helps guide you in your decision making.
So walk me through what you're trying to learn from that information.
20 years ago, you know, we didn't have those things. They weren't around. Mm-hmm. CGMs only just recently, within a handful of years, you know, have become accurate enough, have become available enough. You know, the stickiness was important, and the pumps are now smaller. They're easier to manage. You know, they're just as convenient as a cell phone to use, and that wasn't always the case.
So that's good. That's telling you a number, and then you know what you need to do to adjust for that number, essentially?
Exactly. Your CGM, your continuous glucose monitor, is talking to your pump, and on the pump screen there's a graph, and you can set it so that you have a high blood sugar mark and a low blood sugar mark, and you can see it trend every 5 minutes. The two will talk to each other and connect to record your blood sugar reading. And so, like, when I get home from work and my dog needs to go out for a run, and I can see where I'm trending, you know, does he have to wait an hour before we go, or can we go now?
Huh. Interesting. Well, if you're
out, really cool.
Yeah, very cool. But I mean, if you're in sort of an extreme situation, you can't necessarily wait and futz around, right? I mean, you've got to sort of, you know, you might need to go right now. How do you work out all this management with just the fact that, you know, when you're sort of in extreme conditions outdoors, there's maybe not time to wait, or that you have to be in a big rush? Will, do you want to take that one first?
You're exactly right, Charles. See, the thing about a CGM and a pump is that it helps you anticipate. Jody was mentioning trends. So it's going to tell me whether I am trending, leaning towards being high, where I might need more insulin and less food, or if I'm trending towards a low blood sugar, where I would need less insulin and more food. And that anticipation is what allows me on expeditions to add to my success, is that I don't have to sit around. You're right, in some instances I can't sit around, but I can also manage it with food. I can manage it with my pace. You know, there are different variants, but essentially you do have to know what your blood sugar is, and you do have to have insulin available that is accurate and easy to deliver, and that's what a pump does.
Huh, fascinating.
Yeah, and a lot of times when I'm out in the backcountry, you know, people will laugh at the food I bring out. I generally don't bring Clif Bars and trail mix. I'll bring, you know, oatmeal to make, or yams and chicken and broccoli, or something with some more substance that... Those are foods I eat all the time, so I know how they impact my blood sugar. And the party I'm with could be pushing towards the summit. They want to have lunch on the summit or get this great ski run in, and have to be not afraid to say, okay, you know what, it's right there, but I need to stop and eat now.
Mm-hmm.
I can't go any further, and I can't push to the summit all the time.
Fascinating. It's Outdoor Explorer. We are talking about diabetes today with a range of guests, and the two that I'm talking to right now are folks who do some pretty impressive things. They essentially elite athletes, get out in the backcountry and manage their diabetes. Will Cross is with us from Pittsburgh, and Jody Barton is here in Anchorage. And in the second half, we're going to talk to some more regular folks, if you will, about the fact that, you know, you can just be an everyday athlete and deal with it too. You don't have to be stopped by it. And it's inspiring. And it also makes me realize how much more you guys have to think about these things. The show was suggested to us by the American Diabetes Association because they're having their Tour de Cure coming up on the 12th, which is this weekend. And you can find out more about that at our website at alaskapublic.org, or just go straight to theirs. And get signed up and participate. You've done that before, right, Jody? You've done the Tour de Cure. Tell us, what is it exactly?
I have. I've participated in the Tour de Cure. It's a ride around Anchorage. It's all about awareness of diabetes. And it's for families and diabetics and everyone just to get together and have a great experience and acknowledge the disease and acknowledge the riders. It's not so much of a race as just a fun event to go to. They have different distances around Anchorage that you can ride. And a couple of years ago, my mom came up from New York to ride with me.
Neat.
And so, yeah, that was fun. It's always been hard from her, even though I was an adult onset of being her child with diabetes. So it allowed her the opportunity to come up and ride with me and kind of support me in everything I've done.
Yeah. Will, it sounds like you've been involved in this as well over the years.
I've done a number of events. You're right. An ADA has consistently run good ones. I'd love to do the one in Alaska. I've not had that chance yet, but... I'm sure Jody will carry the flag adequately.
Yeah. So tell me, why is support important? I mean, why is it important to have a group and sort of have this kind of awareness and communication? Is it just because it's a very complicated disease and there's a lot to it? Jody, you didn't find out until you were in their 30s. Did these organizations help you?
They did. And I like to think about it as it's like a team approach. It's a team between you and your family and your spouse and your doctor, the trainers you're working with, much like Will's expeditions and the teams he's on. It's kind of the same approach that I take to my diabetes management. My husband has been great. We didn't meet until after I had already had the disease. And I remember he wanted to take me out to the hot chocolate lounge or something for our first date. Uh-huh. And at that point, I had to explain to him why we couldn't go to the hot chocolate lounge.
Right.
But he's done a lot of research and he's
generally...
You can
go and have a glass of water.
Yeah, we can go do something else, but no candy or sugar. And he's always the one that makes sure I have a snack when we go out for a walk. And always asks me, have you checked your blood sugar before we walk out the door to go anywhere? And every once in a while it can get kind of annoying, but most of the time he's right.
Right.
I check it and I'm a little low, or we get halfway through the walk and I look at him like, okay, can I have my snack now? You think that you don't need it, but it's nice to have that additional support there.
Yeah. How about you, Will, when you're doing summiting or like doing some of these international climbs, does the rest of your team need to be a participant in this management?
They do. They do very much so. I think it's a responsibility that we have as patients to let those who are with us, who are depending on us and who love us, more about the condition, how to manage it, what to look out for. Because, when your blood sugar is radically low or high, you're not quite with it. And so a little help is necessary. And that's something that ADA as an organization, back to your question, does. It offers advocacy, which in turn offers choice to patients. And patients have to have choice, certainly when it comes down to what is covered and what is not, as one of many examples.
Yeah, well, I've noticed, I have a diabetic friend, and I've noticed that sometimes he can have a really bad temper. And when he does, I kind of like, I wonder if your management is not quite right. Is it?
That would be the low blood sugar, right?
Okay. for both of you, I mean, judgment is the most important tool you've got when you're in the backcountry, especially doing any kind of extreme expedition. And so you've got an added factor here, right? Because if your blood sugar is out of line, then your judgment could be impaired. Is that true?
Yeah, it could
that
be.
Is true.
Definitely true. I mean, you get tired or sometimes not quite thinking clearly.
Uh-huh. Will, is that something you've had to work with?
It is. And you have to be honest with yourself. I think any athlete will tell you, you go as hard as you can for as long as you can, and sometimes you push too hard and for too long, and sometimes that works. Competition, that's usually going to work, but day-to-day, that's generally not a good way to manage your health. And, yeah, so like anything, a little assistance doesn't hurt.
Yeah, yeah. So you were just back from Nepal and you were doing some research. Tell us about what you were working on.
Oh, it was so interesting. I was wearing a heart monitor, a glucose monitor, and an insulin pump. So I was sort of plugged in. I had three outlets on my body. And then I was climbing to 6,000 meters, about 20,000 feet. And I was looking at how heart rate and glucose are related. So you would think, the harder you push, the more glucose you would burn. Essentially, you're burning gas in your engine. You just, push your engine hard, you're going to burn the gasoline quickly. Well, it turns out that, you know, some forms of exercise, sort of very casual, slow, actually burns a lot of glucose first, whereas, you know, hard exercise where you can't talk and are really having to concentrate tends to burn your more complex fuels that are stored deeper in your system. And so if I can have an understanding of what fuel is going to be burned under what condition, then that ability to anticipate allows me to function more efficiently for a longer period of time, which is helpful in climbing for sure.
Interesting. So this is kind of information that you could be developing and then sort of spreading out and giving people more detailed guidance of how they could be better at managing their disease?
With diabetes, of course, it is important, but if you think about the aging population, more lung conditions, more heart conditions, and more patients on oxygen in the hospital during recovery. So an environment with a lack of oxygen where your body has to function is an important research arena because it applies way beyond diabetes.
Yeah. But
specifically to diabetes and what I'm doing, yes, fascinating.
Interesting. Does that kind of question resonate with you at all, Jody, in terms of your what you've done?
It does, especially I've recently started to do a lot of bodybuilding, and that was kind of a culmination of weight training, nutrition, and cardiovascular exercise to build lean muscle. And so the changes I've made as far as the types of carbohydrates and foods I'm eating, and how that impacts my strength in the gym, and then my ability to do cardio to burn off the additional fat.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely at higher heart rates, I actually experience it. It's at really high heart rates, my blood sugar will actually increase. There's a range of activity level and heart rate level that works for me, where I'm burning sugar that's readily available in my body to then my blood sugar spiking if I go too hard.
Interesting. So you've done quite a bit of triathlon, which is probably the most challenging of all of our competitive sports, in that you're running, swimming, and cycling, and took that to a pretty high level. And I'm curious as to how those different sports that are within triathlon present a different challenge for your disease.
Yeah, sure. Well, all triathletes have a large focus on their nutrition. Nutrition,
right.
Just through the day of what they eat, nutrition while they're training and doing their different events. The swim, for example, I mean, you can't get anything in your body when you're swimming. So you've got to know what your blood sugar is and start out at that level. And being able to want to start out, say, maybe at 150 at a blood sugar level, you have to start managing that pretty much the day before so that you know that you're going to be okay that morning to jump in and do the swim and not have any nutrition or take in anything that's going to change your blood sugar. You're just going to be burning it at that point. So then you can come out of the swim. And what I did was had water on my bike and also had some sort of a sugar-based energy drink so that I could bring my blood sugar back up enough so that when I ran to the end, I wouldn't crash. And most of the triathlons that I did were sprint distance triathlons, and so they're a little bit shorter. They were easier to manage.
Mm-hmm. Sprint being defined within the context of triathlon,
yes.
Not a sprint like anybody would ever think it was a sprint. So I would think that when you're really competing and you finished very high, you finished the Gold Nugget 50th out of 1,500 competitors. Mm-hmm. Does this take away all this consciousness of your blood sugar, make it give you a handicap in terms of like you're thinking about that so you can't go quite as fast or you have to take some time?
No, I don't tend to think of myself as a diabetic, which is very odd because mm-hmm. I do focus a lot on where am I with my blood sugar. I look at the graph on my pump. I wear an insulin pump. I'm managing it all day long, but it's just become a part of my lifestyle and something that I've accepted and that I just live with. So I don't, when I'm at the starting line and I'm with 1,500 competitors, I see us all as equal. I don't think about, well, who else here is a diabetic or has uh-huh. this or that, or we're just all here doing the race and other people are managing what they have to manage and I'm just taking care of myself.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Interested in your thoughts on that, Will. I mean, you have not let this slow you down. On the other hand, it is a pretty big part of your life, isn't it? How do you avoid being defined by this?
There's no escape. I mean, that's, to put it bluntly, we always are going to live with it. There's no cure. It becomes who you are. And it requires daily attention and adjustment. And, that's just the way it is. My feeling is everyone's got something to deal with. Mine is diabetes.
Yeah.
My competitive drive for being involved in so many different sports is kind of what led me to be able to live with my diabetes. I mean, when I started, I was still doing the insulin by shot method, which is very hard to manage.
Yeah.
It was kind of wanting to do the best I could at the Gold Nugget and in the triathlons I was participating in that pushed me to make that next step to go on to an insulin pump. So I kind of use these tools, the pump, the CGM, the blood glucose tester, as tools so that I can be the best that I can be. They're kind of like training tools to me. I look at it that way.
Well, I really have been fascinated with this discussion. I thank both of you. I'm curious as to whether you guys have any challenges that you haven't accomplished that are out there in the future that you're aiming for, just briefly. Jody, do you have something you haven't done yet that you've been putting off, or that you like as the next step up for you? Sounds like you've already done a lot.
Yeah, I have. I've always wanted to run a marathon, so I may get back into running and try to do that.
Yeah, and that again is, that feels pretty rotten if you're not diabetic.
Yeah.
So yeah, watch those last 6 miles.
Yeah.
Will, what about you? It seems like you've already accomplished almost everything. What are your goals?
My goal is to climb two more big mountains above 20,000 feet or above 8,000 meters. I'd like to go to Tibet in the fall, maybe Pakistan next summer. Those would be my immediate goals.
That sounds pretty good. All right. Well, thanks to both of you. It has been a fascinating discussion, and we're going to continue it with some other athletes in the second half. Jody Barton is here in Anchorage, and Will Cross joining us from Pittsburgh. Stay with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats next Thursday at 8 p.m. on FM 91.1. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime. Download podcasts and see what's coming up on future programs by going to our website at alaskapublic.org.
This next piece comes to us from The Core, produced by Open Orchard Productions and distributed by PRX.
I'm Olivia. I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes on July 12th, 2010, when I was 11 years old.
Hi, I'm Allison, and I was diagnosed on March 10th, 2013, and I was 13 years old. Prior to getting diabetes, I knew Olivia, who had type 1 diabetes, and I just remember her pump and her texting pictures of her food to her parents to try to get the carb count right, and I knew it was really difficult. I was really thirsty all of the time, crazy thirsty. I always had two water bottles I'd go through at school, always going to the bathroom. I remember in science lab one day we were testing pHs, and I really wanted to drink the cranberry juice we were testing. It was crazy how much I wanted to drink it. I was losing a lot of weight in a really short amount of time. My eyes, when I looked in the mirror, they were like really hollow, and we just knew something wasn't right. And then my doctor read my blood sugar and was like, you're 451. I was like, well, is that good? And then the doctor was like, no, the range is 70 to 150. And I was like, okay, so this is clearly high. And she said that I had type 1 diabetes. And I just had a meltdown. I started crying. I was a mess. My mom started bawling too, because my mom and I had both had no clue what it meant. The only time I had heard about it was on Sweet Life of Zach and Cody, when Zach was eating a ton of chocolate candy bars and his mom was like, you might get diabetes if you eat all this sugar. I remember the night before I got diagnosed, I was having a pizza slice and some Gatorade, and I was sitting on the couch just feeling so weak, and that was the last time I would ever eat something without thinking about how many carbs it had in it. At first, it was very difficult to calculate how many carbs and everything, and I had to look it up on Google,
But now I can just look at it and get a good estimate. So it's funny, I've seen little pictures on diabetes websites, like what I see when I look at a plate of food is a bunch of different numbers, and what my friends see is just plain food. One of the scariest moments I've had was my first really big low in Hawaii, when I had given a lot of insulin for this meal, and it was a slow digesting meal, so I was going down to the beach, I was about to go into the water, and my mom's like, no, you should test your blood sugar, and I tested, and it was 30. My whole family was panicking, my uncle ran to go get some juice. That was just really scary for me, because I was so close to passing out.
I think for me, one of the toughest moments was like within the first year of getting diagnosed. It was Easter and I was so excited because I was like, yes, candy. But then I was like, oh wait, I can't have any of this. But I was just so excited that my blood sugars dropped from all the adrenaline and I went to 35. And I had only had like two little chocolates and I hadn't put in any insulin for it. And I remember sitting on the kitchen stool in my kitchen, like I could see stars. And it was one of the scariest moments of my life because I was like, am I gonna make it through this? What's happening?
More of the most difficult times, I would say, are times when people don't really understand what you're going through. For instance, when people don't really understand that maybe the night before you've been up several times with low blood sugars.
Like you're studying all day for a test, all night, and you're feeling great, and then all of a sudden you're 250. And then you're like, oh shoot, everything I've been doing means nothing because it's not going through my brain. And then so you're doing corrections and you're not coming down. And then so I'd be like 250 right before I went to bed. And then you'd have to wake up multiple times during the night. And then all of a sudden you're 30 and you're like, I've eaten so much, I don't want to eat anything else. And then you're supposed to take a test the next day.
That's something that does bother me is when people say that I'm lucky because I've gotten certain things because of my diabetes. If I had to have an extension on my assignment, if someone's like, you're so lucky you got that, I'm like, take a step in my shoes, and I don't think you'd think that.
When people always tell me that they understand and they're like, oh, I'm sorry, I totally understand what you're going through, I'm like, you don't. Allison does, but you don't, and no one ever will. And that was for me the toughest part prior to you getting diabetes, and it was like, obviously one of the worst things in your life and one of the worst things in my life too, because I didn't want to have one of my best friends go through that. But it was also one of the greatest blessings too, because I feel like we've become even closer and you understand everything that I deal with on a daily basis.
Only we and other people with diabetes really understand what it's like, and that's so comforting to have a best friend who does understand.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth, and today we are talking about diabetes. In the first half, we heard from some elite athletes. In the second half, we're going to learn about kids with diabetes, growing up with it, and sort of being a regular person with diabetes, and also hear a little bit about the Tour de Cure, the event that's coming up. And I have two guests with me in the studio now to talk about this, and I think they're both going to be great. Sarah Kemahili grew up with diabetes, got diagnosed at age 2, and has also worked in the past with the Diabetes Association. And Jean Haley has a son with diabetes, Luke, who's 14 years old. She's a retired pediatric physician's assistant and also the daughter of a diabetic. So you've had it from all directions. Thanks for being with us, Jean.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
Sarah, so you grew up with this disease, and so you kind of never knew not having this disease.
That's correct. So I love giving the example because people don't understand it until you say something like, well, I grew up liking Diet Coke and sugar-free ice cream. And when I was really little, before they made some advancements in insulin, I didn't get birthday cake. I had birthday fruit bowls or similar sort of things.
So I think that that would be, it's obviously a bummer not to have birthday cake. It could also make you feel kind of different from other kids.
Yeah, there was always that, but I was always the exciting kid in elementary school because my classmates got to walk me to the nurse if I was feeling low, so that was a big deal. A little bit different, but also I was raised to not feel like I was different. You know, this is a part of me, but it doesn't make me unable to do anything or any different from anybody else.
Uh-huh. So what sort of, when you're a little kid, it seems like this is a challenge because there's all kinds of challenges involved here. Giving little kids shots is just the first thing that comes to my mind.
Yes, that's, it's not very fun. It's uncomfortable. And, you know, but I grew up with it, so I guess I don't know any different. So, you know, being raised from 2 years old on up, I just knew that's what I had to do and what I needed to do. You know, sometimes I would have to introduce a new school nurse or a cousin or a family member or a friend and, you know, oh, by the way, I'm diabetic and I'm just going to do a shot over here in the booth at dinner time because we're about to eat and I need to do that. Mm-hmm. So people get used to it pretty quick. They always kind of scrunch their faces up and they think it's weird and, oh, does that hurt? But, you know, it's kind of fun to educate people, too, that this is not the end of the world. It's just a little bit of a different lifestyle.
Yeah. And what about sort of athletics and outdoor activities and being sort of a normally active kid? Was that an issue?
You know, I have to say the only issue I ever had was making sure that I had enough supplies and that they were well taken care of. So, for example, our insulin can't be left out in certain heat above room temperature. You know, it should stay room temperature. And so, you know, if we go somewhere hot and I leave my insulin out in the sun, it's no good after about an hour. It soils or it's no longer effective. And same thing with the cold, it can't freeze. So I can't leave an extra bottle of insulin in the car when I go on a road trip or on a ski trip and expect it to be okay when I get back.
Yeah.
So there's certain challenges there and planning for low blood sugar. So I always had my pockets stuffed with juice boxes and granola bars and that sort of thing to make sure if I had a low blood sugar, I could stop and eat something and keep going.
Uh-huh. So you grew up in Alaska?
Yes, born and raised.
So did you do all the sort of outdoor Alaska things as a kid?
Oh, yeah, junior Nordic, and I have family out in the bush, and we, you know, snow machining trips and that sort of thing, overnight backpacking, all of it.
Did you, like junior Nordic, it's like tell the coach, you know, I have a diabetes and this could be an issue and sort of just have to be aware of it that way?
Aware of it, yep. As I was younger, my mom would go and introduce herself. And by the way, Sarah has type 1 diabetes. For the most part, she's very well controlled. She knows her symptoms. So I was always able to tell the coach or, you know, anybody I was with, hey, I'm not feeling so good. Let's pull over real quick. Let me test my blood sugar. Yep, it's low. Okay, give me a couple minutes while I, you know, wolf down this granola bar. Uh-huh. And let it kick in, because it usually takes about 10, 15 minutes before you feel totally fine again, and then adjust and keep going. So they always did seem to know, and everybody was really supportive. I never had anybody who was, you know, unwilling to take me with them.
Right.
Yeah, but it was just a little bit of extra thinking, and, you know, your packing list was a little bit longer, so...
Uh-huh.
I know if I'm going out and about for a long period of time, okay, make sure I get all my snacks, I got extra test strips, Lancets, all of that stuff with me, so I don't have a reason to turn around.
Right. So if you're being a clueless teenager going on a backpacking trip, you don't have the luxury of forgetting stuff like I did when I was a teenager.
No.
You jump and, yeah.
No, if I forget stuff, we have to turn around. There is no, we can't keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Jean, your son Luke, has diabetes. When did you get that diagnosis?
2.5 years ago.
Okay.
When he was 12 and a half.
And how did you, what happened? What was the sort of the clue that this was a problem?
We were on vacation, and just at one point, I realized he'd been asking for water too much. And I was just a moment, and it had been actually happening for a while that he'd been up going to the bathroom at night and all that. But he was 12 and a half, so he wasn't announcing it.
Mm-hmm.
But so then we went over to the pharmacy nearby, bought a blood glucose tester, and did that, checked him. And he already knew. He said, I'm pretty sure this isn't going to be normal. And he was at 600. But he was okay. He went to the hospital and he checked in at Los Angeles Children's Hospital. And so we sort of got our start there.
Yeah.
Unbelievable, though. A little like lightning. Unexpected.
Not what you want to be hearing.
Striking
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I mean, your medical background probably helped you in recognizing symptoms.
Yeah, if we hadn't been traveling, I think I might have recognized it sooner. But the fact is, we were staying at different places and all that. Mm-hmm. But yes, once I saw his empty water bottle, and he just wasn't in the habit of drinking. He was so thirsty. Yeah.
So, as somebody who knows nothing about this, why is water such a big clue? I mean, what's happening with the water?
Well, because the bloodstream is so loaded with glucose that either you get a lot of osmosis of water into, you know, dilute that.
Oh, I
believe that's a big part of it. And then, of course, your also peeing a lot, I think, to get rid of the glucose. So it's two dehydrating effects.
I see. Huh.
And Luke was a very special case in that way, because a lot of families end up in the ER. I mean, they're sick to the point they're, you
in
know,
danger.
Their sugars are above 1,000. So, you know, lucky for your family and Luke.
Yeah. So is he had to make some adjustments in terms of his activity and athletics and stuff?
Well, yes and no. I mean, diabetes, I think it changes everything. It's at its best, it's just sort of annoying 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm. You never get to forget about it.
Well, it's possible. You know, and he does hours in the day, and that's good. But no, you don't ultimately get to forget about it. He can't just go through a day like his friends do.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a carb world. And you remember, again, when you go to the, you know, the end of the season banquets, and it's just everything, rolls and rice and sweetened drinks and everything. Like, whoa, kind of forgot about this world a little.
He just has to constantly be aware of not eating those things.
Well, he's also a kid, so he takes advantage of some special snacks when he can get them.
Mm-hmm.
But he knows he feels terrible if he's not in good control. I mean, like, physically feels terrible. So at home, though, we try to decrease the things that we're going to hurt him, like rice, pasta, potatoes, bread, not too much bread, no cereals, no desserts. And then occasionally he does eat fruit, which has an effect on his blood sugar. But anyway, that's how we sort of compromise. And when he gets out and gets a chance, sometimes he takes advantage of it to have a treat.
Okay. Does this affected what kinds of activities he can be in?
Okay, activities. No, he's great. He's been in cross-country skiing. I mean, sorry, he's been in cross-country running, downhill skiing. He's been in soccer. But it does take the extra planning, like Sarah said. And he's religious about having glucose tabs in his pocket or something. I suppose he might even be afraid to go out without that kind of thing. So he's careful of that. And sometimes he probably errs on the side of letting himself go a little high to avoid going low, because that's super uncomfortable.
Huh.
And it's a little concerning, because that can happen fairly fast.
Well, I know that you have to make adjustments, and we heard from our earlier guests about when they're doing these elite athletic events, like a triathlon, you're going to do this long swim. You got to get your blood sugar just right before the swim, because you can't eat during.
Mm-hmm.
That must be something that's hard to figure out with your kid when it's brand new, and it's your kid, it's not you, and you're trying to make sure it all works. I mean, how do you sort of make the adjustment to doing that?
Well, Sarah and we both have continuous glucose monitor, Dexcom. That is a huge tool. So you're not waiting between blood tests. And you can kind of see what's going on. So maybe you're on the chairlift and you say, whoa, I'm 80, but you can check your direction. I'm diagonal down. I'm straight down. I'm double arrows down. Well, then you can, get in your pocket and have something to eat immediately.
So that's something that would be on the screen, the arrows you're talking about?
It's on his little receiver. It can be on a watch like this.
Oh, okay. Neat.
It can be on your phone. So there's several ways to look at your blood sugar. So
it does record the blood sugar every 5 minutes, and it gives you a trending arrow so we can tell which direction it's going. And that was their biggest selling point for this sort of technology, was that, it's hard to tell. I can test my blood sugar at 9, it'll be 120, and I can test it at 10, it'll be 200. So what happened in between there, and you can kind of, the CGM, or the continuous glucose monitor, will help us track that. And speaking of the triathlon, like she said, I stick that in a Ziploc baggie when I do one, and take that with me. And when I get out of the pool and I'm starting to get on my bike, you just pull that out of your pocket and check it. Okay, I'm doing good. Or okay, I'm not. Pull out a glucose tab.
It's cool.
A fantastic tool.
So how has that sort of worked into, in sort of the cross country running, it's sort of like be ready with the, figure out like how much glucose you're going to need during the run or something like that, and then make sure you're ready? Is that sort of this?
Well, also my son is of the opinion that if he eats a lot of fat before he exercises, it helps stabilize his blood sugars more than if he has carbs or glucose containing. And then he has that available. But I think he adjusts by sometimes going a little high, which is not comfortable, but
Is that something like I could imagine getting in conflict? And you could answer this too, Sarah, like with your parents. I mean, did so many things you get in conflict with your parents and mm-hmm. your teenager, and now you've got this whole other issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're in the middle of it. Yeah, I don't know if you want to answer
that.
But.
No, it's I have been very thankful that of all the things we could be in conflict with, and there are some, he has never made an issue about his diabetes. So I can say, okay, have you taken insulin for that? Or do you know you're going high? Because I can also watch him right now, even though he's
So it's on your iPhone.
It's on my watch and on the cell phone.
Uh-huh. Cool.
So I can see what he's doing in real time.
That must be a relief.
It is a relief, although I'm not happy right now with the number. It's almost, well, we don't want to talk about it. It's a little high right now.
So would you call him up and say?
I've texted him here while I'm here at the studio.
Oh, interesting.
To ask him what's going on and if he's aware or if we have a problem. Because there's, at any given time, if something's going wrong like that, it could be a bad site. Maybe you have put your infusion set into a scarred area and it's not absorbing well. Or maybe the insulin's off for some reason, like she said, a little too hot, a little too cold. I mean, you hope every condition is right, but sometimes...
Well, there's so much to it. Gosh.
There is a
it's
lot
like
of
playing
moving
20
parts.
Questions. Yeah. It's always the amount of questions.
Sarah, did you ever have a conflict with your parents when you were a teen and you were dealing with this? Or issues where you just disagreed with it? Or maybe you did things that they didn't know about?
I don't think I ever disagreed with them. You know, my mom was always very careful. Sarah, did you check your sugar? Did you do your insulin? You know, so at some point I do remember being a preteen and, Mom, I did that already, you know? So we just had that relationship. But, you know, I've gone back and thanked her for it time in and time out because I think it's helped me be a little bit more type A about my blood sugar and keeping good track of it. So, no, I don't think we ever disagreed on the management style. You know, it was just the constant reminders that I remember as a preteen being slightly annoyed with my mother. Mm-hmm. And again, I thank her for it all the time now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and we're talking about diabetes and athletes today. The fact that you don't have to give up your athletic pursuits if you have diabetes, but you do have to make some changes. And with the studio with me today, you just were hearing from Sarah Kamahili, and also Jean Haley is with me. And there's an event coming up, which is a Tour to Cure. Sarah, you have worked for the Diabetes Association in the past. Tell us more about the event. We heard a little bit about it in the first half. I assume you've participated in it and probably have helped organizing it at times.
Both, yeah. It's been my pleasure to do both. I rode in it quite a few years before I got hired by the ADA in Fairbanks to coordinate the Fairbanks Tour to Cure. And the Tour to Cure is our local bike ride. It's not a race, it's a ride. And we encourage families to come out. We have varying levels of or lengths of ride. So I think we have a 25, 50, and 100K. In Anchorage this year, starting at the Mountain View Lions Park, and that's on June 12th this year.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about a fun event. It's really celebrating all the people in our lives with diabetes. So anybody you know or if you have it, the people riding with diabetes during the event are called Red Riders, and we often ask them to wear their Red Rider jersey or t-shirt, which is provided at the event, just so we know that they're the people we're riding for. And it's a good celebration, and it's kind of like getting the family together because the diabetes community in this state is small, but we're close. You don't find many people with diabetes who you haven't run into before or know through a friend with diabetes. So this is a good place for all of us to gather and say hi and ride together and have a good day.
So is that a fundraiser as well?
Yes. Yes, it is.
So folks are out getting pledges or they're donating? How does that work?
Both. So there is a ride minimum, and we have a fantastic online donation site. And each rider has their own page, and they can put pictures, and then there's team pages. So we ask that if you have a friend who's riding, go ahead and go online and make a donation to them. And these donations go towards research. They go towards local activities and things in our lives like Alaska Diabetes Camp. We're the only... camp in the state that holds children with diabetes. So it's a diabetes-specific camp just for the state of Alaska.
Huh.
And that's coming up. That's actually next week. The kiddos get on the bus on Sunday.
So it may already be over with by the time we're on the air because we're pre-recording.
Oh, yep. Then that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. They will be at camp. And
while
they come
we're
back
on the air, maybe they're that's listening right. to us. Hi, kids.
Hi.
So why is it important to have a camp? I mean, what are you trying to accomplish with that?
Oh, diabetes camp is our bread and butter for the American Diabetes Association. We take kids with diabetes and we give them a week together, ages 7 to 17. So we gather 64 campers and, you know, they get to meet other kids with diabetes. They get to spend the week feeling like they aren't any different. Everybody's testing their blood sugar before dinner. Everybody's counting their carbs, and everybody's watching out for each other's lows. And so it's a cool way to meet other kids with diabetes. I went to camp as a kid, so I know this. You know, you meet pen pals. I had a pen pal in Fairbanks from when I was at camp, mm-hmm. and she Facebooked me last week asking about my CGM. So, you know, we're still in touch with these kids that we meet at camp. And they come home, you know, we always joke, it's the bus ride. The bus ride is always the hardest. When they leave, they're upset because they're leaving their families. And when they come back, they're upset because they're leaving their new friends.
Right.
But it's once a year and they love it. And I know this is going to be Luke's first mm-hmm. year at camp.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
And I know he's excited.
He
and
is.
Gene's excited.
So is it just doing the usual camp stuff?
Yep. The camp is on Kenai Lake, so canoeing, archery, they have field games. They learn all about the nature around them. So I think they have little fire starter kits and they learn about the plants and the flowers and that sort of thing. But overall, they just have a blast. It's a really great time.
Yeah. So has that been an issue in your family of like feeling different because he has diabetes? Or is that something, cause it sounds like the camp is sort of a focused on helping with that problem.
Don't think it's bothered him too much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he feels different, but he is very much looking forward to camp. He hadn't wanted to go before this year, but I think getting to identify with other kids that also are doing the same as he, where it's normal, it's going to be good for him.
Yeah, and I guess why is that important? I mean, is it because like being aware that you have to maintain this? Is it because of the sort of the mood things that happen? What makes it, what is it special that I wouldn't get that you would get? I mean, I guess that's for you, Sarah.
It's the 24/7 aspect, I think, for all of us. The people with diabetes, the caregivers. Camp really brings it to light the things that you're thinking about 24/7. All these other kids around you are thinking about it at the exact same time. They're going through the same process. They're worried about test strips and glucose tabs and all the things that your friends without diabetes don't normally think about. And, you know, we always say that camp is so good for the families, too, because those families who are awake in the middle of the night worrying about low blood sugars, they're calling the school nurse to make sure that their kid got their insulin before or after lunch. All these worries, the 24/7 worries that the families go mm-hmm. through, they get a break too. So when their kiddo goes off to camp, their kids are being sent with a medical staff team of 12 people, the best we can offer, the absolute best medical team. And they're going to be at camp with your kids. So there's trust there, there's safety, there's trust. And so these families can, you know, spend time mm-hmm. relaxing and getting a full night of sleep
uh-huh.
for yeah. the week.
Yeah.
It is true that we do keep our CGM monitor by our pillow at night. So diabetes control is mostly in Luke's hand while he's awake. But at night, it's mostly, because he sleeps so hard, it's mostly in our hands. So, yes, it's true. We don't always sleep well because unexpectedly he could go low or whatever growth hormone or what late carb kick in. We don't know, but sometimes he's high too.
Well, that sounds terrible.
It's doable, but it'll be nice to have
a break.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, Sarah, you have done a lot of backpacking and other activities away from town. And all this technology you're talking about has batteries and mm-hmm. has stuff that has to be maintained and that can break. How do you handle that? Do you take like a solar cell along or do you just take extra batteries or what do you do?
I bring backups for my backups
mm-hmm.
Because it's funny how things just tend to go wrong. And when they go wrong, they go really wrong. So mm-hmm. Infusion sets are what connects our insulin pump to our body. I bring quite a few of those, probably triple of what I think I'm going to need. Batteries and batteries and batteries. You know, everything. And then I double everything of what I think I'm going to need because, you know, it's the one time that you go to the water park with your friends and three sets fall off because of the water. Or backpacking. I used to have a tubeless pump before I switched to my current one. And that thing, it would all of a sudden alarm for no reason and you'd have to change it. So, you know, okay, everybody stop, offload the backpack, dig it out of the bottom of your bag, because for some reason I put all that stuff in the bottom of the bag, and redo all of that. And then, you know, caring for the insulin, making sure, okay, is it really going to be 80 degrees on this hike, or is it going to be 30? Making sure that the insulin is at the right temperature so it doesn't lose its quality.
Wow.
So
it's a lot to think about.
Yeah. And actually, in general, you know, all the technology has been nice. It's been quite the change. I used to be on syringes, and now we've upgraded to pumps and continuous glucose monitors, and that's made all the difference. It's fantastic. But then there's you go down to the basics. Like, I can't always tell when my blood sugar is low or when my body's just exhausted. You know, so that might be something for like the sprint triathlon. But also, you know, on your third day of hiking, and you're just tired. Like, your muscles are hurting, your overall energy. So I can't always tell if I'm exhausted or if my blood sugar is low.
Right.
And that's where that continuous glucose monitor comes in handy. I'll pull it out of my pocket and say, oh, nope, I'm just tired. My body's tired. It's not my blood sugar, or vice versa.
And when you're competing, I mean, if you're playing hockey and you're like off your game,
do you sort of wonder then?
And then you could also, we talked in the first half about how your moods could be affected. So maybe you're being grumpy and not being a good team player, and you know, it seems like it could add another factor.
Oh, it absolutely does. Yeah, with the moods too. And you know, I don't know about Luke, but my family tends to recognize my bad moods in relation to my blood sugar before I do. So, you know, it's like the Snickers bar commercial.
Is that a little annoying when they point that out?
It is for me. Like, ah, man, gosh darn it, they're right. So,
yeah.
Yep.
Have you seen that happening with your son?
Yeah, I think it's the hardest problem with diabetes in a way, because I don't think there's a lot of time he doesn't feel that good if he's too high or too low. So obviously, and he does say that, I don't feel I'm mad because I'm high. So he recognizes that problem too.
And that is something that as a parent you would sort of be aware of and watching for. But you've also got all this technology telling you everything.
But, you know, we're all distracted. He's distracted and we're distracted. So if it was the only thing you were doing in your life is just watching your blood sugar, you probably do even a better job. But, you know, kind of within busy lives, we're trying to do the best. It caters to those who plan ahead and are very methodical. So if you get busy or you're like in the midst of outdoor activities, maybe you're focusing on other things.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I found this to be a really interesting hour, and I want to make sure folks know once again about the Tour du Cure, which is on the 12th, which I believe when we're airing that, it's just this coming weekend, and you can get involved and support that activity, which is supporting folks with diabetes and the American Diabetes Association. My guests have been Jean Haley. Thanks for being here, Jean.
Thank you.
Sarah Kamahaley, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
In the first half, we heard from Jody Barton and Will Cross. You can find a lot of links and more information if you want to learn about our guests, learn about diabetes, and learn about the Tour du Cure at outdoorexplorer.org. Our producer is Eric Bork. Grace Bojean is our production assistant, helps set up the shows. My name is Charles Wolfworth. Thanks for being with us. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.